This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability. Today, we have Scott Keys on the show. He is the founder of Scott's Cheap Flights, which is a website for people who want to be alerted when super cheap international airfare pops up. It began as an informal hobby, which we'll hear about in the episode, with Scott's friends back in 2013, before officially opening to the public in August 2015. Scott's Cheap Flights currently serves the United States, Canada, Latin America, the Caribbean, all of Europe, Asia, Australia, New Zealand, and soon to be Africa. I've personally been a customer of Scott's Cheap Flights for, I'd say, the better half of 6 months or so now, and it's the one thing that I just constantly look forward to, so a huge testimonial going his way. The business is smart. It is efficient. It is lean. Check it out. All of the information are in the show notes. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. It was a fun one. And if you don't travel, hopefully this episode inspires you to do so. Let's get right to it.
Let's go.
Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Jonathan.
Well, great to have you. I cannot wait for this particular answer to the question I'm about to ask, but more so the interview, because I've been a fan of yours and your business for a while now. So before we get into the heavy-hitting questions about entrepreneurship, business, life, all that fun stuff, imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. You can even envision what country you may be in, but where are you going to eat and what are you going to order to make your day complete?
It's going to be something indulgent. Okay. I'm the type of guy who, I really aspire to eat healthy. I aspire to, eat green. I would love to be vegetarian if meat didn't taste so damn good. So if it's my best day and I'm really topping it up, what I'm eating is honestly something like some cheap street food on the side of the road in, Mexico or Vietnam, somewhere like this with incredible food culture. And I'm not one for white tablecloths. I am not one for I love really good food, but man, I want that money to be going to the food, skip the ambiance. Don't care about all that. Give me the tastiest, some of the best tacos I've ever had in my life were 2 pesos a piece outside of this little kind of random market in southern Mexico in Oaxaca. 2 pesos is about 15 cents or so. And some of the best I've ever had in my life. They were incredibly delicious. But those are the types of places I always think about when I think oh man, if I could have if I had one meal left to go, what would it be? It'd be that.
That's cool. That's awesome. And honestly, I think things just taste better once it's off the street, whether it's off the street cart or something of that nature.
Yeah. Well, and especially, if it's a place everybody's worried, is it going to be healthy? Are you going to get
is it safe?
Sick or something?
Yeah.
But then if you kind of sit there and think about it, as long as you're going to a food cart or food truck or stand where, there's a lot of churn. You can see a lot of people going in and out like that. Stuff that you're eating, it's going to be fresh. It's going to be right, cooked right then, cut right then, prepared for you right then. Whereas, you go to McDonald's, you go to some random restaurant, the kitchen's in the back. You have no idea what's going on back there. Mm-hmm. Like it could have been sitting out for forever. You don't know. And so at least in those situations, you're actually seeing it right there, what's being cooked in front of you and that, it's going kind of quick and that it's and that all these other people are essentially a testament to the quality of it just by their choosing to eat there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people, maybe it's just this America mindset, but just because it's not in America, people in other countries and other walks of life don't have a different food system as we do. Mm-hmm. We all have the same food system. We're all human beings just because mm-hmm. if they're eating it, mm-hmm. They're not getting sick. There's a strong chance we're not going to be able to get sick either.
Yeah. Give me the street food all day. I'm all about it.
I love it, man. So the first real question about the on the podcast is about a time that you felt lost or blind in business. So tell me about a time that you felt lost or blind in business
and how did you overcome those obstacles?
All right, before I get into it, let me ask you a question. You play poker?
I have. I'm not like an avid gamer, but okay. I know the rules.
Okay. So one of the, I play some, but one of the things that they tell you early on when you're trying to learn how to play poker is that when you're making bets, you're throwing your chips in, that you can't think about the chips as dollars. Even if, say you have $100 worth of chips in your chip stack and somebody makes a $5 chip bet, like you can't think of, damn, is that worth $5 to me? Like you just have to think of it as like a percentage of your overall chip pool, your chip stack. I was never very good at poker because I could never get out of the mindset of thinking of those as dollars. Like I always just like, I could bet $5 on this, but man, like I'm starting thinking, all the things I could get for, I could get 60 tacos or, whatever for that $5 down. I'd just be thinking those types of things. And so I would end up playing very conservatively. And as a result, it just ended up being not nearly as good as other players, especially when they recognize that. The way in which I started to feel blind, and I noticed this when I was starting out business, was when revenue started being generated by the business and money started rolling in, I started to realize like it was difficult for me to think of that as anything other than my personal funds, funds that there might be some great thing, that investment that would really help on the business, but is that worth, $10,000 to me personally? It was very difficult to get out of that mindset of starting to think of it as like opportunities to reinvest in the business and grow more over the long term versus like, am I spending my own personal hard-earned bucks on this? If I had maybe taken some business classes in college or like had an MBA or any sort of like formal training in business, maybe I would have gotten out of that habit sooner. But suffice to say, out of it now and much, I think, better able and better equipped to sort of think about revenue that's coming in and starting to look at it as like opportunities to reinvest and continue to grow even faster than we had before.
So to people who don't necessarily know what Scott's Cheap Flights is, I can say something that, and I said off air, and I'll be more than happy to say on air, which is your emails that you send on a routine basis is that brief moment of a getaway for me, for me to think to myself, wow, I could go to Jakarta, or I could go to Ho Chi Minh, I can go to Mexico, or wherever else that these emails are saying to me. Can you tell us briefly about how you generated and started the business? We'll start there, and we can dive into rabbit holes going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So I could just mention that, I never took business classes. I certainly didn't get a degree in business, entrepreneurship. I was the furthest thing from my mind. I actually studied political science in school and was working as a journalist for a number of years. But I kind of moonlighted just as a hobby, side hustle of just finding cheap flights. It's what I knew and loved. And, especially on a journalist salary, I was like, okay, I really, if I want to be able to travel, I got to be able to find, flights that are less than like $1,000 or, like something actually reasonable to travel on. And so it all sort of culminated then that skill set in, December 2013, when I found and booked the best deal I've ever gotten in my life, which was $130 nonstop round trip between New York City and Milan. It was like eye popping. I couldn't believe it. Heart beating, like palms getting sweaty, all that type of stuff. And I booked it and went. It was an incredible trip. I didn't even know I wanted to go to Milan until I found this ticket for $130. And so it was when I got back from that trip that all my, friends and colleagues come up to me, word had spread, and they said, come up to me, hey, Scott, yeah, hey, how was your trip? Cool. Hey, listen, next time you find a deal like that, can you let me know about it too so I can book it as well? And by like the sixth or seventh person who had told me this, I started to think, oh man, you know, I'm not going to be able to keep track of everybody I should let know. Why don't I just start a little free email list for my friends so that when I find these things, I can just message it to them all at once. And so that's what I did. And for, you know, about 18 months after that, I just did it as a hobby. It was for fun. It was purely, you know, for the love of the game. And it wasn't until about after 18 months or so, you know, word had spread, friends told friends, and the list grew from just a couple dozen friends to about 5,000 people. And by that point, MailChimp and these free email lists start to actually charge you. You know, it's free at first, but then if you get above a certain number of subscribers, they say, okay, you have to start paying for some of these hosting costs. And so I didn't love the prospect of paying for the privilege to email my friends. So it's like, okay, at the same time, there's a lot of people who are very interested in this. Maybe there's a business opportunity here. Maybe people are willing to actually like pay a couple bucks or something a month and get some value out of this. And so that's what started giving some thought and launched what's now Scott's Cheap Flights.
Very cool. So one of the hardest things to do in business is to attain your first 100 customers. You mentioned that you briefly mentioned the idea of what you did in order to get your first 100 customers, but could you speak to the maybe the first 100 customers, how you converted them from unpaid to paid? And then if you could expand on some of the processes and procedures that you're using now to obtain clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great question because especially coming from the journalism world, coming from that background, it's very cognizant that it's extremely difficult to get people to start paying for something that they used to get for free. And so, you know, I had this list of 5,000 people who were interested and really liked getting the deals. But, you know, it's sitting there in my mind thinking, can I convince some percentage of these people to pay for that, even though they've been starting to get it for free? So what I ended up doing was starting up a freemium model where I didn't have to kick anybody off. I didn't have to say like pay or, you know, GTFO. But like I told them, hey, look, I'm going to start a premium tier here where the premium subscribers get all the emails and free subscribers just get one out of every three. You know, the premium subscribers get the deals 30 minutes beforehand. There's no ads in the premium email stuff, you know, little kind of perks like that. But then I started that premium tier and sent an announcement out to everybody saying like, hey, this is happening. But what I also did was set a very low price point, a very low price point. Because in my mind, at that point, it wasn't a matter of like, what's the optimal kind of revenue that could be generated from this. It's like, it's more a category shift. Can I get people to start paying for something no matter what, you know, can I get people literally to pull out their credit card in a way that they weren't willing to or never had to beforehand? And so that was the test in my mind. Like, are there people who are actually willing to cross categories and start paying? And in my mind, I said, okay, if I can get 25 people to do this, then that's a success. Because I think at $25, 25 people at $2 a month, $50 a month, and that's what I was being charged in hosting costs to run the email list. Like, okay, look, if I can at least break even here, and I'll be happy and I'll figure like, okay, maybe there's something here. It was a little bit slow going at first, but by the end of the first month, I think I actually not only beat 25, I think I actually had closer to 100 people who said, yeah, I'm willing, you know, sign me up. I want those premium emails. And, you know, ended up growing a little bit higher each month. And the beautiful thing about subscription businesses is the recurring revenue that's, you know, happening every month or every whatever term that people are signed up for. And so that's basically we fiddled with pricing since then. We've done little things like that, but we We haven't, we've basically eschewed trying to do a hard sell on the premium list. Maybe it's because I'm a bad businessman. Maybe it's because I am like naively thinking that I would just, I want this to be for people who really want those emails, look, some people are just happy getting a few emails, you know, a couple emails a week with some good deals. And some people are like, I need to know everything, you know, if I really want to be able to travel. And I don't want to like really kind of pressure people to be in one category or another, because each, you know, something's different for each people. What we do though, and then I'll wrap up here, is that in the free emails, we put a little teaser in that tells you, oh, look, free subscribers missed out on $380 round trip flights to Barcelona. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to get all the deals like this, click here to upgrade to premium.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we kind of try to give folks a sense of what they might be missing, but without trying to be too strong-handed about it.
Mm. So now that you have this, I'd say, incredible base of just constant referrals, do you see something in the future that you can kind of hint at, foreshadow, or do you want to kind of just like keep it in this this raw, real space of just genuinely helping people?
So I hesitate to make too many long-term predictions in this, because a year ago, Scott's Cheap Flights had about 5 people on the team and, you know, 200,000 subscribers, which is substantial. But today we have 30 people on the team and like over 1.3 million subscribers. And I never could have predicted that. And it's difficult. So it's extremely difficult for me to imagine what it's going to look like even a year from now.
That's awesome.
In terms of like coworkers, in terms of subscribers. What we do was, and so we're like kicking around a bunch of different ideas of what things would look like in a year, or two for that matter. But what we're really trying to do is make sure that it kind of build out a little bit more on the holistic travel experience. So, you know, everybody, either whether that's making booking flights easier, whether that's making finding flights easier, whether it's, you know, being able to much more customize your email alerts to make sure you're getting exactly what you want to be getting, whether that's, you know, once you've booked your flight, hey, here are some really cool things to do in this destination that you're going to, starting to figure those things out right now to make long-term decisions. Yeah. But it's tough. It's tough because it's always easy to draw, you know, 20/20 hindsight. It's always easy to draw a line back and say, like, oh yeah, you know, this led to that. But from this vantage point, trying to decide like what direction to go in.
Yeah. Well, do you find it difficult to, I'm assuming that most of the people that you're working with are all over the world. And you don't necessarily have like a quote unquote office, so to speak. I mean, maybe you do, let me know if you do.
You're absolutely right. We all work remotely.
Yeah. Was any of this philosophy of your work and your life and the way you operate, was there any inspiration that came from it? I'm just like, thinking like there's a lot of similarities to the idea of like the 4-hour work week, for example, of like Tim Ferriss. So I was just wondering if there was any like inspiration from that particular book, or even if, did you ever read that book?
So I have read the book. I wouldn't say like drew lessons for that per se. It was mostly a happy accident. Mm. And this is why even when we got to 5,000 subscribers and I was trying to decide like, okay, do you turn this into a business? I was at that point, you know, I was working as a freelance journalist and trying to decide, okay, should I like go figure out more of a sort of 9-to-5 office job, or should I stay, you know, working from home, try to figure stuff out. And at that point, my then girlfriend, now wife, and I decided we wanted to get a puppy. And so I was like, well, you know, puppies are a lot of work. Like, you got to be there to take them out every couple hours. Why don't I stay from home, keep doing some freelance journalism, but give this Scotch Chief Flights thing a go, because, you know, I can do that from home. I can help raise the puppy at least for the first, you know, 6 months or a year, go from there, and then see if, and then see from there. And so that was like, there was a, God, I wish I could remember who wrote it, but there's some folks in the sort of financial independence crowd who talk a lot about sort of envisioning the lifestyle that you would like to have and then working backwards to find a job that's going to fit that type of lifestyle or a career that's going to fit that. Because most people try to think like, okay, what job do I want? What career? What, you know, what's my passion? And that's part of the way that I started to think about it. It's like, look, I am really happy when, you know, I have time to be able to do other things, when I have time to like hang out with my puppy, when I have time to, you know, be at home. Like, I like cooking, I like grocery shopping, when I have time to be able to, you know, I don't know, watch sports and ride my bike and play soccer and stuff like that. And so all of those types of things were much more conducive to having a remote lifestyle where I wasn't spending a couple hours a day in traffic commuting, where I wasn't, you know, having to get like embarrassing enough to say showered and like dressed up and stuff in the morning and stuff. Like, you know, I could be flexible with it, working from home. And so it ended up being just, hey, look, this is what I like to do, or how, you know, how I ideally like to be sort of living my life, working remotely. And then that has allowed us, by dint of having an all remote company, has allowed us to cast a much, much, much wider net when we are searching for new folks to join the team, because it doesn't have to be, you know, everybody within a 10-mile radius of Portland where I live. Like, it, you know, we have folks all over all of the world who are on the team, and we can basically just focus on like, hey, who is who's the best for the job, who's most suited for it, and, you know, wherever, regardless of where they might live. And so I think it's, we've ended up benefiting a lot from being an all remote team.
That's cool. The next section that I would like to segue into is a part of the podcast that I call Explain That, Graham, where I basically went in and I found some cool pictures of you and all over the internet. And I just have a couple of questions about each picture that I'm about to show you. So I have about five.
All right.
This one in particular is is you holding a magazine with what seems to believe your picture in it.
All right.
And it was in Kiplinger's magazine. After going to 3 pharmacies and 2 airports, you finally found the copy. What was it like to be able to find the magazine and see yourself in it?
I just felt bad for anybody who paid money to have to look at my ugly mug in on paper. I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry, y'all. It's one of those surreal moments where, you know, to actually like see, in a way that like I'm like probably more used to most people to seeing my name in print. And again, that's not like an ego thing. It's literally just from a background in journalism. But I'm not used to seeing my like face and whatnot, especially in this type of situation. So I, you know, it was flattering, it was fun. I know my mom was really proud.
And that's cool.
I appreciate it from that respect.
That's cool.
And I'm usually like, I feel like I'm admitting a lot of stuff here. I don't put a lot of stock in my like personal appearance in general, for better or worse. And so having professional photographs taken and published for the world was definitely like a new experience for me.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. This picture in particular, I'm just curious, personal reasons.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're in Denver, and you mentioned that you met your business partner or a partner of some sorts for the first time.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, is that like your core business partner?
Yeah, so that's my full business partner, Brian, the real brains behind the operation. It's such a weird story of us meeting, where a couple months after business was founded, I was just, you know, I like had a like it was blowing up, had a ton of subscribers, and I was just I was flooded. I had so much work to do. I had so much stuff, and I was like, I need help. Like, I need help managing this. I need help, like, not like clerical help, but like business help. And so this guy just, you know, very serendipitously emails me out of the blue and be like, hey, you know, I'm running a blog. Like, I'm interested in doing an interview, giving away like a couple free subscriptions. Can we like set up a time to talk? So we did an interview. It was great. I should probably go back and find that interview someday. But I just like got a real good vibe from him. We had a real good rapport. And, you know, after we finished up the interview, I just kind of sat there thinking like, you know, I'm looking for sort of a partner. I need some help on this. And he seemed like a real sort of go-getter type. So I just emailed him like, hey, got any interest in coming on board? Like, what do you think like we could sort of do to improve things? Luckily enough, he was free and available and very interested. And before we knew it, we'd like signed an agreement, a partnership where we were basically co-founders or co-owners and whatnot, which in retrospect sounds like the craziest fucking thing to like this guy that I never met in person, that I just talked to on the internet, be like, yeah, I think we should go into business together. Like, I think this is the right thing to do. And so like, it's not that I would ever recommend this as like an optimal strategy that people should be pursuing when they're trying to find people to go into business with together. But I just, you know, we just got really lucky I got really lucky that he's an incredibly like smart, talented, hardworking guy that we really mesh well together, and that our skill sets really kind of complement one another. That's and cool. It's been just miraculous ever since. So anyway, for the first year and a half or so, we actually never even met face to face. He was working as a digital nomad for a while, finally came back to the US a little over a year ago, and we met in person for the first time. So that was that photo.
That's such a cool story.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
my next one is about this picture right here. And so I'm assuming that this is Japan. And correct me if I'm wrong, does this person have anything to do with Hiro Dreams of Sushi?
That is Hiro's son.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yes.
So, yes, exactly. So number one, that's a bucket list item for me. And you hashtagged bucket list.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it was a bucket list item for you. Tell me about the experience. Was it magical and beautiful as I can imagine it to be?
It was by far the most expensive and by far the most memorable meal I've ever had in my life. Like, it was
Can incredible. I ask like the range, if you don't mind saying?
Yeah, no, please. Here's the deal. I've watched Hiro Dreams of Sushi, I think, twice. Like, it's an incredible movie. I love sushi, love Japan. Like, you know, it's just a beautifully done, eye-opening film. And so if you recall in the movie, one of his, I'm going to get the details a little bit mixed up here. I think he has two sons. One of them works for him, but one of them, the tradition is that he has to go off and sort of like found his own business. Mm-hmm. So this is that son's restaurant that, you know, the father Hiro has his own Tsukuyabashi Hiro, and then the son has one as well. The son's, at least from smart people I know, I've talked to, and especially folks who have eaten at both, say they're very, very neck and neck quality-wise. But because it's the father and because of his fame and notoriety, he charges a lot higher prices. So I think the typical meal at the father's place is upwards of $500 per person for a meal, whereas at the son's place, at least for lunch, which was a little bit cheaper, I think it was $250 per person, which again is way more than I've ever spent in my life on on a meal. But at the same time, I've never had a meal quite as memorable as that. Like, it was just a, I don't have the vocabulary to describe how incredibly sumptuous this fish was.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things that I, you know, I'm not at all in the habit of spending that much money on food, but when it's something that I'm purely paying for quality, you know, I don't, like I said at the top, I don't care about the ambiance, I don't care about white cloth, tablecloths and all that, just that it's a incredible meal, one that's super memorable.
That's cool.
That was it. Very fun time.
This could be a short answer, but I've seen, yeah, this is actually a really bad picture. But it's you at, well, this was actually a video, but I snapped a photo. But I saw like maybe five or something like that images on your Instagram of wrestling. I'm a huge wrestling fan.
Nice.
Are you a huge wrestling fan as well?
So I watched a little bit back in this sort of Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, back in those days. I hadn't watched too much in terms of like recent U.S. professional wrestling, but I just prior to, or actually kind of during that early stage of Scott's Cheap Flights, I was actually living down in Mexico, in southern Mexico, in Oaxaca, and started to get really into lucha libre down there, you know, the Mexican professional wrestling with the masks and all that. And it was just fascinating. It was really, really cool to watch. And so I ended up going, I'd go to lucha libre matches just like once a month or so. Well, they're the sort of like more backyard variety down in Oaxaca, or up, you know, if you go up to Mexico City, it's in a big like arena and, you know, fireworks and the whole nine yards. So if any of your listeners are ever visiting Mexico, highly, highly recommend seeking out and going to a lucha libre match there. Even if you're not into professional wrestling at all, it's just a really, really fun cultural event. Like, the crowd is as fun as the actual wrestlers.
That's cool. Never been. I'm a huge wrestling fan. I would love to go to Japan. I'd love to go to see a lucha libre match. That's another bucket list item for me. My last question in regards to Instagram is this picture right here, which it's not that appealing. It's a great picture, but it's the sun and the American flag.
Yeah.
Is there anything with like the current state of just the world and America in particular, is there anything that you wish that being a world traveler, that Americans can take with them to those who may not have ever traveled before? And I'll give you a perfect experience. And this is my personal philosophy. Mm-hmm. My mom has never traveled outside of the United States. And my girlfriend has never even traveled outside of the United States. Mm-hmm. And personally, a certain part of your mind unlocks when you get to experience the way other people live. So is there anything in particular that, like, maybe you could speak to that story in itself, or is there anything in particular that you would say to the Americans that, to maybe be more cultured or diversified? Do you see where I'm going at?
Yeah, it's a lot harder to hate people when you know them. You know, it's a lot, it's really easy to kind of otherwise think of them, oh, it's just, you know, it's just those Mexicans, or it's just those Chinese people or whatever. If you don't actually, if you haven't spent time there, if you don't know these people, one of the things that I find most valuable when I travel is that when things happen in the news in a place that I've been to, there's actually context now around that in my mind. So like, something will be happening in, let's say in Belarus, and I visited Belarus a year and a half ago or so. My wife has some family there. And so, you know, whereas before that, I would have just seen an article about Belarus. Belarus, next article. Now, anytime I read something in Belarus in there, it also instantly draws back in my mind, you know, the people I met there, the food I ate there, the sights and smells, and like, it gives me a lot more context, a lot more, I don't want to hearken to say understanding, but at least sort of empathy for that type of situation, and really kind of personalizes it and it humanizes it in a way that if I've never been there, if I never thought about it, if I don't care about that place, then it doesn't, I think, register in quite the same way. And so that's one of the things I really, frankly, love about travel, being able to draw up those past experiences when new things happen in life and the world, when you meet new people, when new, you know, world events and stuff happen.
The last question, always my favorite.
Yeah.
Three pieces of advice. So the Blind Entrepreneur was created for people who may be temporarily lost or blind in business. Maybe they just need to go out and travel the world, who knows. But to the individuals that are stuck, what are three pieces of advice that you would give to a fellow entrepreneur?
Yeah. All right. Give this a little thought. First, super important to find product market fit before you jump all in. You know, I find in a bunch of like entrepreneurial subreddits, you know, talk to folks, hey, yeah, I really want to, you know, start a business or, do, you know, become an entrepreneur in some way or another. I'm thinking of quitting my job and starting doing this. How about you like find some way to make it a side hustle first, find some way to like dip your toes in and see, because look, maybe it's a great idea and maybe it'll work, but it's also, you know, frankly, the stats are out there. Most businesses don't work out. Most startups fail. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a reason not to try, but it's also a reason to tread lightly in the beginning until you start to receive validating evidence. Because, you know, there's a number of ways in which Scott's Cheap Flights got really, really lucky. And even though it was doing well early on, you know, that, like I said, I just hoped for 25 subscribers in the first month and we got 100 and just, you know, went up from there. It took me about 6 months after launching to be comfortable even stopping doing freelance journalism on the side and starting to pay bills that way and to really go all in on Scott's Cheap Flights, because it was still for a while, you know, I didn't know, like, do I want to put all my eggs in this one basket until, you know, and basically waiting until I saw enough validating evidence that that was the right move. And especially seeing validating evidence from the market that people are buying it, that they're using it, that they're liking it, before saying like, okay, you know, let's do this. Let's go all in. Other pieces of advice, and I try to keep these, when I think about these, I try to keep them fairly practical, because, you know, there are a million places that can tell you, oh, just, you know, keep trying, never give up, yada yada. I personally stray to the more like practical advice. One of the things that I think is really important is thinking about your voice and branding, and keeping the importance, especially nowadays, of keeping things very sort of light and personable. People like, you know, when companies act like they're, you know, act as people, that they're not being completely sort of stiff and corporate and boring. You know, so the importance of being able to write your emails, write your copy, write your website, write your promotional materials in a way that isn't taking itself too seriously, that it just sounds like it's another person there, you know, which it is. Like, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're a person, there's no reason to try to like write in really boring corporate speak that nobody actually reads, because it's just boring as hell. Like make it, I don't know, make it a little more interesting, make it a little more light. Don't be afraid to like, just write it like you were writing it to your friend, essentially. The last thing I'll say here is, you're going to want to find sort of, you're going to, you know, when you're doing this, you're going to have role models. You're going to have people that you'd like to emulate, things that I think are really, you know, you think, oh, wow, that person is really doing it. Like, they're killing it. I'd love to be able to sort of like get some advice from them, talk to them, ask them questions about stuff like that. It's very important to like find these mentors, find these role models, be able to ask questions of those people. But it's actually a difficult thing to do, because if those people are, you know, doing well and successful and killing it, they're busy. Like, they don't have a ton of time. And especially, you know, like, I hate to say it, like, I get emails all the time. It's like, hey, you know, can you help me get my email marketing platform up? And as much as I'd love to help everybody, like, it's just not practical. It's not feasible. Like, I already have a few enough hours today as it is, and I think my wife would prefer that those, you know, scant few hours go towards, like, her and the family rather than random subscribers. But at the same time, if you're starting out and you want to talk to those people, you want to message them, you want to sort of pick their brain, having like a blog or a podcast or somewhere that you can sort of, this is a person, okay, I'm blasting this out to the world, is an incredible excuse to talk to smart people, mm-hmm. ask important people questions that they would otherwise ignore. You know, it's like, hey, John, you know, Jonathan's just asking me some random questions, like, you know, sorry, I don't have time for that. Oh, Jonathan, you know, with the podcast, who like has audience or folks that are listening to him, Jonathan with the blog, who, you know, has some readers and stuff, who that's being amplified to, much more likely to respond and engage with that. So if you have those types of questions, if you want to get people on there, I think that's a lot of how, I could be wrong about this, I think it's a lot of how Tim Ferriss started out, with basically just having, you know, a blog or a book he was working on or a podcast, just not the podcast, that came later, but, you know, having those things where it's just a great excuse to talk to the really kind of smart, important people that he wanted to talk to.
That's exactly why I created the podcast. So
hey, there you go.
that advice is practical. And to the people listening, it is a real, real advice.
I love it.
But Scott, thank you so much for being on the show and taking your time to talk to us about your experiences about business. You know, it really means a lot. But I'd like to give the next 30 seconds to you to promote what you have going on, how people can learn more about your business, be a part of your journey, and potentially become a customer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, no pressure. We're not in the high pressure, high sales game, but, you know, if you're a traveler, what we do is spend all day, every day searching for cheap flights. We love finding those cheap flights. And so when we find them, we just email them out to subscribers. If that's something you're interested in, we would be honored. We would love to send cheap flights your way. You can just find it at www.scottscheapflights.com. No apostrophes, no dashes, no underscores, no nothing. Just scottscheapflights.com.
And as a testimonial, I've been a customer for a while now, and it's just it's a great way to just expand your mind and think about travel, even if you're confined to a computer in an office. So to those of you that are still watching and listening, thank you guys for always liking, commenting, and subscribing. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and head over to tbeshow.com for more interviews. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a good rest of your day.